Chapter 18. Constantine the Great. Rome, the ancient capital of the powerful Roman Empire, is in anxious suspense. Thousands of soldiers march through the streets of the city, past white marble palaces and temples. The city is filled with soldiers. It can be noticed on everything that important events are at hand. No work is performed. The citizens stand on the streets in small groups, busily engaged in conversing with each other and watching the passing troops. Very soon, something is going to happen. We notice that on the nervous bustle which prevails everywhere in the streets. We hear one say, "He is close to Rome with his army." Another predicts, "He will surely lose it, because we are much stronger. Just bear in mind what I am telling you." "I don't know about that. I don't know about that," is the opinion of a third, and he shakes his head doubtfully. About whom are all those people talking? Who is close by? Entire Rome is filled with one name. Small and great, young and old, distinguished and low, all people talk about him. With some we can notice that they are afraid. They are nervous and chaste. Others walk about while looking around cheerfully, and we perceive secret joy with them. A smile curls their lips. But when another detachment of soldiers marches by, then the conversations are hushed, but commence again a little later. He comes to Rome. He is already near. But who is he then? Ah, everyone in Rome, young and old, can tell you that. His name is upon everyone's lips, in the most beautiful palaces, but as well in the houses of the poor, on the streets and squares of the city of Rome. Yea, everywhere is spoken of Constantine the Great. Not far from the city of Rome, a Roman army is encamped. The soldiers already have a long, difficult march behind them. They came from Gaul, which at present is the country of France. Their commander, a tall, robust man with sparkling eyes and a commanding look, has led them over the high, impassable Alps into Italy. That march over those proud Alps with their snow-covered peaks has been extremely dangerous. He had led his men along gaping abysses, from which death grinned at them, over steep rocky mountain slopes, to sunny, warm Italy. Rome, Rome, that was the object of their march, which had been perilous to their lives. Whenever the dangers seemed to be too great, whenever the thousands of soldiers became discouraged, whenever they despaired that they would reach their goal, then their brave commander inspired encouragement into them. Then his command was, "Forward, men!" And then they went forward. Whoever became afraid, he, their brave commander, was not afraid. He encouraged and urged them on. He showed his soldiers how they had to act in dangerous moments. When they hesitated, then he removed their hesitation. When they reached the end of their strength, then he inspired them with new courage. And now? Now they are close to Rome. Far in the distance, they see the large ancient metropolis lie before them. But they all realize, although they are close to Rome, they are not in Rome. There still must be fierce fighting, and what shall be the result of that battle? The commander of the army does not know that either. Oh, outwardly, nothing can be seen on him. He does not permit his men to notice anything. But inwardly, He also is far from calm. The next day the battle shall commence. Then it shall be victory or defeat. Then he shall win all, or he shall lose all. That is possible too. That possibility he also takes into account. Behold, there he rides along. The evening is falling already. The sun sets in a golden glow. The heavens are beautifully colored by the sun's last rays. His commanders and soldiers follow him with their eyes. In their eyes is respect and admiration. They love their commander. Who is that commander? Don't you know? Just ask the most common soldier in the army. He shall answer, "Our commander? Why, he is Constantine the Great." Constantine the Great. Who is that really? Why has he marched with an army so close to Rome? What must he do there? Why has he dared to face the greatest dangers? We know that Diocletian, of whom I told you in the previous chapter, had appointed assistant emperors. Galerius, the cruel Christian persecutor, was one of those assistant emperors. But Constantius, who ruled over the western part, was also such an assistant emperor. Diocletian had died. In the east, Galerius had continued the persecution in a violent measure until he became mortally ill. All those things we know already. Immediately after the death of Diocletian, Constantius had put a stop to the persecutions in the west. Constantius had a son, Constantine by name. His father had him educated at the imperial palace, which was located in the city of Nicomedia, hence at the court of the chief emperor Diocletian. Already in his youth, Constantine marched along to distant countries. Then he marched to war against the enemies which attacked the Roman Empire. But, however young he was, Constantine was not afraid. With a contempt for death, he cast himself into the midst of the battle. We could find him at the most dangerous places, inciting his soldiers to stand firm. For that reason, it was no wonder that Constantine became an excellent general. However, when the campaign was finished, then Constantine returned to the imperial palace at Nicomedia. Even after the death of Diocletian, Constantine remained with Galerius in the imperial palace. Galerius was secretly jealous and afraid of the brave Constantine, and he walked around with secret designs to murder him. Constantine noticed that. In a dark night, he escaped from the imperial palace, secretly leaves Nicomedia, and hastens to his father Constantius. There he would be safe. When he finally reaches his father is upon his deathbed, and soon he breathes his last. Constantine has just arrived in time, and he closes his father's eyes. The Roman army in the west now proclaims Constantine as emperor. When Galerius notices the escape of Constantine, he is furious, and that rage rises to a climax when he learns that Constantine has been proclaimed emperor of the west. But it is a powerless rage, for he can do nothing about it. However, very soon after that, Galerius dies of a terrible sickness. This I have already told you. Then comes a time of great confusion. Various emperors ruled at the same time. In Rome itself, a certain Maxentius is proclaimed as emperor. Maxentius wants to push Constantine off the throne, but when Constantine heard that, he marched with his army toward Rome. He defied the almost insurmountable difficulties, and with his brave soldiers, he marched over the Alps. Now he lies close to Rome. Soon the battle between Constantine and Maxentius shall break out. However, the army of Maxentius is three times the strength of the army of Constantine. Therefore, it is no wonder that the heart of Constantine is filled with concern. How shall that unequal battle end? Who shall win it? Who shall lose it? Very much depends on that. For that reason, Constantine rode away. For that reason, he sought solitude, and when the sun sets in a golden glow, and then the brave Constantine stares thoughtfully in the distance where Rome lies. Oh, who shall help him in that fearful struggle? Not the idols. Constantine knows that very well. He no longer has respect for the gods. He no longer believes in their power. In his anxiety, he cries to the God of the Christians. That God alone can help him. That God alone can give him the victory. And then? Then Constantine beholds a vision. In the light of the setting sun, he beholds a shining cross on the golden heavens. Letters, words, are written around that cross. In our language, those words signify, "By this sign thou shalt conquer." That cross has not really been in the sky, but Constantine saw it as in a vision, as in a view. To him it was real. That sight made a mighty impression upon him. Having returned to his brave soldiers, he has a representation made of that sign of the cross, and has it put on his banners. His soldiers attach a cross to their helmets. The next day the battle breaks out. It is a fierce battle, and the thrice stronger army of Maxentius yields. It is routed in disorder. Maxentius himself is carried along with his fleeing soldiers. They must cross the Tiber, which is the river that flows through Rome. In that hopeless crush, Maxentius plunges from the bridge and drowns in the Tiber. Constantine gained a glorious victory. In the year 312, he triumphantly enters Rome at the head of his victorious army. He is now emperor of the western part of the Roman Empire. In the east, in the room of Galerius, another emperor rules, Licinius. He is a relative of Constantine. He is his brother-in-law. And he makes a treaty with Licinius by which the war comes to an end. The results of this change are enormous, especially for the Church of God. The persecutions of the Christians are stopped. The Christians obtain freedom of religion. And when some years later his brother-in-law Licinius breaks his promise and starts persecuting the Christians in the East again, cruelly and bloodily, then Constantine marches against him to battle. The Lord assists Constantine and grants him the victory. Licinius is taken prisoner, and later he is put to death. Now Constantine is emperor of the entire Roman Empire, over the west as well as over the east. Now Constantine is absolute monarch. Behold, that is how Constantine the Great became emperor of the powerful empire of the Romans. One of the first laws which Constantine made was that the Christians were permitted to rebuild their destroyed churches. They received all their properties back again, which Diocletian and especially Galerius had taken from them. What great joy prevailed with the Church of the Lord, and that is to be understood, is it not? They were finally free after such a terrible oppression. Now they could meet together undisturbed in their houses of prayer. They could listen undisturbed to the preaching of God's word. No persecution or death threatened them anymore. They could worship God after the desire of their heart without being disturbed. The Christians were persecuted for almost 300 years. Satan had tried for the space of 300 years to uproot the Church of God, but that was not successful. God himself had preserved his church. God himself had given them strength to remain standing in the hour of danger. Now the Lord had given them rest. How joyfully those Christians must have rebuilt their destroyed churches. Be assured, they have thanked God from the bottom of their hearts for that wonderful deliverance. They had rest at last, rest after so many years of fearful adversity. Soon, a second imperial law came. Emperor Constantine the Great decreed in that law that the Christians could again take part in the government of the empire. In this way, there were Christian governors again, Christian officers. In short, all offices were again made available for the Christians. The emperor did not only admit them to all those offices, but he supported the Christians wherever possible. He had the most beautiful churches built. He gave the bishops large incomes. In the beginning, Christianity was put on a par with heathenism, but since the Christians obtained access to all offices, and since the Christians were helped by Constantine in all things, Christianity expanded ever more at a fast rate. Constantine did not feel himself at home in Rome. Too many heathens still lived there. For that reason, he had a new city built close to Nicomedia. That city received the name of Constantinople. That means the city of Constantine. When Christianity became ever more powerful, Constantine finally had the heathen temples closed at various places. Hardly no one ever came anymore to bring sacrifices to the gods. Later on, we shall hear more of Constantine the Great. Now was fulfilled what ages ago Daniel already had foretold would one day happen. The stone, which had such a small beginning, so insignificant, had become a great mountain. Just before his death, Constantine had himself baptized, and he died in the year 337 AD. He is buried in the cathedral at Constantinople. There his bones rest until the last day. The Lord was pleased to use Constantine to set his church at large. The Lord was pleased to use him to give his people rest. The Lord inclines the hearts of kings and princes. Not long after that, heathenism was prohibited by the successors of Constantine the Great. The heathen temples must be closed, and the penalty of death was imposed upon the sacrificing to the gods. That large Roman Empire had become a Christian empire. Who would ever have imagined that? But here we see that which is impossible with man is possible with God.